Okay, we'll go ahead and start. This is the Vanguard Academy board meeting. Today is Tuesday, November 25th, 2019.
I guess it's the 26th.
25th, it's the 26th.
26th.
So, let's find it, we'll change that on the minutes. And run agenda. So, to start with, we'll say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, first of all, we'll do a roll call. This is Kent Johnson, Board Chair. We'll just go around the table.
Suzanne Owen, Director.
Kathleen Kingston, Assistant Director.
Stephanie Evans, Minute Taker.
Kim Mangum, Board Member.
Darren Jenkins, Board Member.
Tony Jenkins, School Counselor.
Scott Kingston, Board Member.
Dave Kingston, Vice Chairman.
Okay, the first item on our agenda is public comment. We'll give 2 minutes if anybody wants. Has any public comments? Doesn't look like anybody else is here, so we'll move on. And the first item on the agenda is to vote on the minutes from last meeting. So I think if anybody has a copy, there's copies up here. We can go through them.
Okay, I'll second it.
Okay, so all in favor of approving the minutes, board meeting minutes from last board meeting, say yes?
Yes.
All opposed, say no. So the minutes have been approved. We'll go on to the open points, and the first item on the open points is to talk about excellence. Is there anything... anyone would like to bring up about excellence and how we're implementing that here at Vanguard, or how anything we should do to implement that in the future?
Second semester schedules went out.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I think on, as far as daily, you know, I appreciate that this is still on here because sometimes I lose track and lose record that that's what we should be doing on a daily basis. We do have, our student body president has really gone the extra mile on that way in trying to help motivate our students. We also have a teacher, Belen Stoll, has stepped up, and we have kindness cards or points that we're trying to motivate our kids, especially, to do excellent things and to incorporate it. But I do need to do better about doing that on a daily basis and making that a priority.
the staff and the teachers and everybody has that, that idea is of excellence in everything, but especially excellence on areas that you want them to progress and things that you feel like are important. You'll see different schools will have different priorities or emphasis in certain areas, but you have the right priorities and emphasis in things that kids have.
And I will say, you know, along the lines, and maybe it'll just end up kind of being part of the director's report, but our management reporting, Rebecca Lucas, as our day just steward, has really done, she's gone the extra mile, and I believe that that's where the excellence is coming in, and I think you guys are going to see it. This last one that we put out to teachers, she's really got a lot of things automated to where the reports that she runs and puts in their individual packets save them hours of work, and the teachers have really expressed how nice it is to go through it and then find it a workable document to then, you know, start implementing the action plan, you know, when we're falling short, or if even celebrating those successes, that it can trickle out to the kids and the parents on a much quicker and more efficient way. So I think that you're going to like what you're seeing there. So I agree with you where our priorities are, and I know that that's where we put a lot of emphasis is in trying to get that taken care of, and I think it's going to help.
It's good. I appreciate that we have that on the item, on our item as well, and I think you have to have that vision, mm-hmm. and you have to have it put out in front of you, so mm-hmm. as a target. The next item is our work for this program. Do we have any more requirements for?
Pat Turner actually sent out a message asking about it. She did said it's something that she is interested in doing. I don't remember the details as far as what it's going to cost.
I think right now there is a slight cost, and Kathleen and I have been reviewing that, and that's ready to come out to board soon as far as what kind of compensation we can and should offer for our teachers and our staff to improve or increase their education and knowledge background, especially those that are going to bring it back to Vanguard and benefit Vanguard with it. So it actually turns out that it's not quite as intensive as she thought it was, and she should be able to complete it possibly before the end of this year. And I don't know if the state will retroactively let us apply that credit. I don't think they would unless we have the program in place to where we are in touch with the businesses, and the businesses are providing that report or that evaluation of the employees that go out. So it's getting very close, and we just have to kind of move forward with that. Catherine's biggest time consumption this month has been getting those schedules ready, which they are. So it's been, that's another excellence in what we do, because they're really moving forward. But I think, I'm sure that she can get that finished this school year. I know that it can be implemented as early as next school year, possibly sooner.
And last time I did mention before what Sarah Ware had made the comment, it brought up that it was going to be a lot of work. Originally we thought that when she mentioned it to me, it looked like we were going to need each of the leadership teachers to have that qualification, but because Catherine would be over it and they would kind of be set up as co-teacher, it would work to mm-hmm. have her listed and them to work with her and make sure that they were reporting back, and so it would only take the one person. So that was something I mentioned last time that was clarified, that it will be able to work under that umbrella. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing I met with Sarah Ware last time, that was a concern whether it could be done under one person. So we are a lot closer than we thought.
Okay, we'll leave it on until next time, and then just see what progress we have. The next item is the exit on the assembly hall. Do you have any new information on that?
No, I think I turned that over to somebody else, didn't I?
But Grace's name got added to it. I thought she was going to check with the property owner or something on it, but
that's
I don't
right.
remember
I
the details.
Okay, did we put that on here?
Her name got added to it, but
and
I don't know.
And also said we were going to follow up with the lease to see whose responsibility it was.
Okay. I thought that's what Grace was.
Okay, so that's still in progress, I think. until Grace gives us a report on it. The next item is to make a proposed amendment for the charter for the year 2023 through 2024. And we have the idea that we're going to do this with an app. I don't know if anybody's been assigned to that app.
Well, it says Kathleen.
That's right.
I recommended creating the app, and I could probably do it, but I think I would need some...
I think I probably want to work together on it.
Anyway, I think that would be the best way to track it and to be able to hold... The question came up before, where do we hold the ideas for it, and how do we process it? And I think that having it in an app makes the most sense to have it be repeatable if needed. And I just think we probably would need to just create a timeline and get that out.
Is it 18 months or 2 years?
18 months for enrollment increase. For most of those things, it is. Some of those smaller amendments don't take that long.
So that lines a year from this coming February.
Okay, let's move it this way.
Okay. And we may want to revisit some of the potential enrollment numbers as we're trying to project those. It may be that we want to shoot for something a little sooner than that, but yeah. But so I'll work on getting those enrollment projections put together and kind of see what we think, if we need to do something sooner.
Okay. The next item is make a yearly calendar for the board members. Make sure we don't forget things.
So I started putting one together that we had in the past, but it's not.
I wonder if Scott has it. Who opened that? Did I open that?
I think you did.
And I got assignment?
Wait, so I think you said.
So why don't, if you could give me a list of items that we've had on our board meetings, and then we can just turn that into a calendar.
Okay.
And make sure it's complete. The next item is to have a summary for the Abbott.
I think we brought that last time.
Is that why I got assigned to it?
No,
because I wasn't here.
I think it's because you weren't here as to why we didn't close it, but I think we did have it here last time. So are we?
I think that's going to start showing in the management reporting as well.
Through leadership, because the AVID curriculum is being implemented in all the leadership classes, but if we're going to be an AVID school, then we'll need to offer AVID elective classes along with it.
I wonder, would that be part of the on the MRP, something every time, like every board meeting, every MRP shows a status or progress? Or
on AVID itself?
Yeah, or is that something?
It might be good if we're putting an amount of money and resources into it to watch and see what we're doing with it.
Make sure we're getting an ROI.
Yeah, what value, I guess what the value is.
So do we want to keep this open point on there?
I think so. Until it starts showing up on MRP so we can get data.
Maybe we ought to change that to come up with an indicator of what do we want to see.
Day-to-day plan for the classes would give you that information, or what would you want to see? Because it would show which techniques they're implementing. And well, it's not just that though, because we are doing some school-wide training. We brought the trainer in last spring, and we've done some staff meetings in our teacher meetings, the development on that. So I guess, you know, we're expecting some of those things to be across the board.
Yeah, I think we just want to see where the rubber hits the road, but using parental notes, they're using these habits and methodologies in the classroom. So you'd have to define which ones you're going to monitor and then use those as KPIs.
Okay.
So that's good.
We call
them
observation sheets, the mentoring sheets.
Top summaries. I wonder if we have to add on that to identify the key indicators.
Identify what?
The key indicators for ALEC.
KPIs.
And how you'd measure it. It'll, and as soon as this shows up on the top summary, I think we can take it off this list.
Okay.
Is that right? So.
And who do we want that to be opened up to? Or who is the open point for?
Right now, it's on Suzanne, unless we want to put it on someone different. If Kathleen's going to write the app.
As Kathleen just mentioned, we wondered if we need to put that on our mentoring observation sheets, and the ones that we're assigning as mentors right now are our operations and curriculum and assessment as mentoring. So it might need to move on to operations or curriculum, because I mean they're kind of all tied, because that's what we do in our operations.
So, should we change it to operations then?
I'm fine if we leave my name on it right now, but if we might move that direction, and maybe it's just I need to take the responsibility of putting it there.
Yeah, let's do that. And then on the disposition, let's say that we're going to include curriculum, assessment,
operations.
So. And ultimately, if we have a top summary coming up with the key indicators, then we'll be happy.
Okay.
So. Okay, that's the last item on here, so we'll go to the next item on the agenda, is the first of the report.
And as I mentioned already, the MRP, I'm just really so excited about the direction it's going, and we did move that to be a weekly MRP for our teachers. Because we felt like that as we're working with our kids, when we're looking at their attendance, when we're looking at their grades and their progress, then I don't want to let too much water go under the bridge. We really want to get on it and get those action plans ready to go. And the way Rebecca has sent it up, it's just, it took 20 minutes.
20 minutes, it was the first time.
To do the weekly thing. And that way we're not inundated with, oh, I got to do. And then it becomes a working document that you can actually make progress on and making those contents.
Sorry, is it 20 minutes because most of it is done with your daily activities?
It's because most of it, the reports are already incorporated in the MRP. And so when you're trying to look to see who's your kids you need to focus on, it's already there. Whereas previously I had to run the report, copy the data, put it into the MRP. It's already there for me, so I can just go from that step and then decide what I'm going to do.
So that's helping the teachers in their job, and what they're doing anyway.
Yeah,
which is
I feel like this is one of the best
amazing.
That we've ever had.
Amazing. And along with that, we're addressing the issue that's come up that our PowerSchool and Canvas grades aren't always syncing. So that's part of the report that she's put together. She has it so that they have the PowerSchool and the Canvas grades right side by side.
Super easy to see.
So they can just check and verify that they're the exact same grade on both systems.
Is that one report or is that?
It's one report that just has the grades aligned, and it shows you the ones that aren't matching up, so you can look into it and see what you need to change.
So if you have the data, why don't you just?
Yeah.
Is there another step?
What do you mean by that? Like, we have the data, and
if they're missing something in one system or whatever, that's what they flag, so then
yeah,
they go
so
in and
so then as a teacher,
see.
I can easily see right away that my grades aren't matching up, and I can fix it right then.
But we still have to hand enter or hand Why can't the computer?
No, the computer does it.
Yeah, the computer does the whole.
It provides the
report. They have
report
to enter the grades in one of the systems somewhere.
So they enter it in on Canvas typically, and then Canvas syncs overnight to PowerSchool. But there have been some syncing issues of what was going on. And so what this does is provides the data side by side, so a teacher doesn't have to go into this system and go into that system and get those updated and then cross-reference. Are they all the same? Then all that happens is the report draws from PowerSchool, it draws from Canvas and puts them side by side, and then it identifies if there's a discrepancy in those, then it'll say, nope, it's not aligned.
So it's just a verification step.
Yeah, before that would take about a half hour just because of all the extra processing you had to do. Now, automatically, you can know if it's not matching up, and you can just go to the problem.
So if the report can do all that, why doesn't the report just kick out the exceptions? Whenever there's anything that doesn't match, have a report data that kicks it out of.
What do you mean, kick out the exceptions?
So, in fact, once you see an exception.
It says this is not a match, but it's not a match because of something the teacher has done or not done, and so that's a thing. So they sometimes haven't entered something or they haven't completed.
But the ultimate problem is the syncing isn't happening.
The only reason why it's not happening is because a teacher might forget a step. So usually if you can fix it at the beginning of the semester and find it, catch it then, the rest of the semester it should be fine, unless you maybe had one assignment you forgot to tell that assignment to sync. But that's what with the MRP, it will catch that right off, so that then you don't have parents seeing a different grade somewhere else.
So it's kind of a teacher syncing issue.
Yeah,
it's just mainly just making sure, because if they change the title of an assignment as well, then sync's gone. So, it just means that we're following a checklist and we're checking it out. And like Stephanie said, if it shows up as, nope, this isn't aligned, then they can immediately go to that and say why. Instead of saying, taking all that time to figure out, are they in alignment? And then figuring out why, it's just... It saved him a lot of time.
Is the syncing every day, every hour?
Happens
every
overnight.
So once at night, and then the next day the teachers pull it up and check off, verify everything?
Once a week,
because we require the teachers have updated their grades once a week.
So how can we get that data?
Well, for the most part, like I mentioned, if you... catch it right off from the get-go, the rest of the term it should be good. With mine, when I got my report today, the only problems that were on mine was that they might be like point or a tenth of a decimal off, just because one system rounds different. But I didn't have any other errors because everything else was already fixed before that. And
it really shouldn't be a problem as a general. It was the changing of the quarters that created that offset. Yeah. Because they had to unsync
everything
all of quarter one
quarter.
So that it could sync quarter two. And so we not all teachers had done that and didn't really know that they needed to or how to do it. And so we went through that process.
Yeah, this makes it super fast and easy to know if you have a problem and
So we can see it anytime we can look at it and say solve the problem. So it's just a good thing. So that's where MRP is going. And then our schedules, as I mentioned, they for second semester are done, and we pass them out to the students today for their review so that they could go home and go over it with parents and identify if their schedule looks like it should, if they're missing anything. Catherine went through every student schedule one by one to make sure there were no holes in their schedules. And they've been working through the counseling department, the CCPs, or the GPS plans to make sure that the classes that they're signed up for are according to the GPS plan. So everything looks really good from our standpoint right now. And then we're giving students until the 18th of December to, if they have any schedule change requests, to get those in writing. We sent the form home. We sent the master schedule information home with them. With their schedules, so that they should know what to do if they do need to make a schedule change request, or to check and make sure that their schedule is as it should be. So that's good. This is the soonest we've ever had something like that in place. And I think the most streamlined and efficient way. And so if we follow our checklist, because the department has put together a really great procedure checklist, so that, and if, as long as we follow that, I think that we're going to have a lot better system in the future.
Yeah, that's exciting.
That's kind of where a good chunk of the time has been. And, you know, everything else is still kind of going on. I don't know if there's anything more that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to streamline our janitorial service and make sure that we're getting the most bang for our buck and that our building looks good and pristine. I excused him from tonight because I've got Nancy, and she's going to go through the building through this week and weekend, to establish better zones to make sure that it's equitable for all the kids. So.
I have a question. The discrepancy between the two systems, why are there two systems? Why is it not just one?
Good question. It would be nice if you could have just one. Canvas is a platform that can be used for students to access the content, to take tests, to submit assignments. It's a very good interface for that to happen. Teachers can post things, students can see them. It doesn't contain a student information system, so you can't take attendance on it, you can't report behavior on it, you can't report, it's just grades. Grades and assignments and that interaction between the teacher and students. The state has purchased that, and it's very user-friendly, it's very accessible, and it's a good thing. But to report the data up to the state on a daily basis, we have to have an information system that contains all that data. So that's why the grades need to sync over to PowerSchool, because all the grades, all the attendance, all the behavior issues, the special ed numbers, everything, and we've got the December 1 date coming up for special ed, all of that has to go up to the state daily.
Seems like if you have one database and then just security levels, you do it all in one.
Yeah. And I've asked... Can't we just, you know, I've even asked John, who's over the Canvas part in our building, I've asked him to check with them and see, have they considered creating an SIS so that we can just have one system? And it doesn't hurt to ask, you know, but that's kind of where we are with it.
Are there a lot of other schools that use Canvas and PowerSchool or some other?
They use Canvas and Skyward, they use Canvas and Aspire, and to my knowledge, then PowerSchool and Skyward are the only two information systems that will even kind of sync with Canvas. So they might be using Canvas for maybe that platform to put assignments and to interact and all that kind of stuff, but they may just be entering grades directly into PowerSchool or to Aspire, whatever they're using.
It's a statewide issue that's having to use two systems.
Yeah. They either use two systems or else they just don't use Canvas.
Canvas has a lot of functionality that people
like. And it's used by the USHI institutions as well, Salt Lake Community College, Snow College, University of Utah, they all use the Canvas as well. So it's a really good platform. It's just, it'd be nicer if it was one, for sure.
We need more software developers. So.
Somebody could work for Canvas.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody could make some good money.
Okay, well, should we go maybe to the next item? The next item is the Finance Committee, so I'll turn that over to Councilor.
I'm going to pass around. Sorry. I've been working with Erin Andrews, who's started taking over the business manager position, to update and the packet that will include the financials. And so it is double sided at this time for you guys to. So what we've done is, in the past I used to just kind of focus on the overall and what percentage and where we were, but we've also we were working on it last year, really monitoring the program balances, and this helped us with the end of year and making sure that the programs are closed out correctly and that we are monitoring them throughout the year much more effectively. And so just today he finished updating. So there were certain things as we close out the year. Sometimes there's funding that needs to be set up as an accounts receivable as we close out the year. And then when we receive it, we actually need to reverse the receivable. And so having it in this format has allowed me to catch things like that at an earlier time as that funding comes in to make sure it's recorded in the correct place. And so as the state has been really pushing on that and making sure that all of the classes and the programs are monitored and recorded correctly, this really helps to see each one individually. And so some of them, when you look at the individual programs, they may be negative at this time, or they're because of the way the funding comes in, then some of it is in increments that is part of the monthly allotment, and some of it is in reimbursement, such as a federal program like the Title I. We are just barely finishing the Title I and the IDA applications and the Utah grants. They've switched over to that from the previous year being in the UCA, the Utah Consolidated Applications, I think is what it stood for. And it's a new system for the whole state, so they have had some glitches and had to kind of pull things off and have it put back on. So we are just finishing the application process for some of those grants. And so we do spend it, and then we have to request the reimbursement for it. So that's kind of how some of those grants come. And anyway, so this is this change to the format. If you have any questions or recommendations, we tried to group them on the front page. The first page, you have the overall year to date, and then you have special ed grouped together. Because there are several different streams of special ed and what they can be used for. And then the next category is different restricted funds. And then the 7,000, 8,000 are federal. That's what it is. And then at the bottom, to be able to track, we have different programs, like the basketball team has raised funds, or the music funds, or the student government. To be able to track that, we've created classes within. They technically would go under the VAR, which is a general fund, but for the purpose of the different programs and the different teams, it allows us to better track that and give them updates of what they have available, and we track that based on the lifetime of the program so that we can see what has carried over previously from different years. Sometimes there's more funding one year, or a fundraiser or something. And music, we have kind of just tracked separately so that we can see how that's going, because it's kind of a different animal. And then when we do the fundraising, so if you have input on how to better do that one, that we'd like that. But other than that, that's...
What's the
VAR on that? VAR is just the code that they reference for the general fund that can be used. It's not a restricted fund. So right now, those funds are covering like a federal expense for a program such as Title I. We would make the purchase, and technically it's kind of using the VAR funds, and then it will be replaced with the actual, as far as cash flow goes. So the cash comes in and you for the other program, and it goes back.
What's the difference between the profit loss title, 5,000 to 6,000 versus 7,000 to 8,000?
7,000 to 8,000 are federal programs. 5 and 6,000 are state, just different. Restricted, they are not special ed, though. We keep special ed separate because it's state funds, and it can only be used for the 1,200 special ed is our state funded special ed funds.
5 and 6 state?
Yes. Each of those programs have different restrictions on how that money can be spent and what categories are allowable.
Okay. date is all for just October?
It's cumulative, so it's year to date as of October 31st.
Has Grace seen this?
I don't think she's seen this one.
Did they have her set up?
Yeah, we did have her review. So. But other than that, I don't really have anything. Oh, I guess I have a random thing. At the Title I, I should have thought of this at the Excellence. The Title I Directors Meeting, Vanguard was, they listed off the top 5% in proficiency and recognized Vanguard for proficiency in the top 5% for last year. In the Title I Director Meeting, they brought it up because Title I looks at Title I funds are based on, what's the word, economic disadvantage, low income. And so a lot of times low income students don't perform as well as higher income students, and that's one of the things they watch for. But at
we were
the second on the list that they had, and I don't know if they were in order, but we were in the top 5% of all schools.
You beat us.
I can't remember. I'd have to go back.
All schools are all 5-1s.
Title One.
I don't remember for sure Title One, but I think it may have been all schools for the particular area that they were looking at. But I would think it's probably tied to the Title One. And as I looked at the data, our Title One, our economic disadvantaged students are scoring just as high or higher than our
students. So proficiency, that's the grades, the students' grades.
The proficiency on the statewide testing. So our students are not, what we're doing with Title One funds and anything else is making a difference for those kids, so they're not.
Could we get a list of that?
So I will see if I can go back and find it. They did send out a video link, and I'll see if I can.
If someone's doing better than us, we'll check and see why. Or at least see what they're doing.
That's right.
So we can
I'll make a note and see if I can find that.
Okay, is that it for finance?
Yes.
So we'll move. Excuse me, to the Academic Assessment Committee. Joni's on the one here, so.
I've got a couple of things I want to go over. One is the GPS summary. Our focus this year has been making sure we meet with every student to get their GPS points completed and their CCRP points. So as you look at the summary, the first part is just that we've updated their GPS point. The next one is that their form is completed, which means we have been meeting with the parent. And then the third one is that they actually signed it, so it's kind of an important thing that the parent is approving that this is what we want, the classes that we want to take. And then the next three, summary and updated, credit recovery, and some credits earned. We're still working on getting our summary updated because it all has to be done manually. It would be really nice to have a system to where it was automatically done, doing retrieving that data, but it's not right now. So if you look at our population, we've got right now 62% GPS plans are completed, 44% meetings have been held, and 44% of them have been signed. If you want to look at each by each of the advisors, then there's the details there. We have put a deadline on here, 12th grade will be done by September 30th, 11th grade by October 31st, 10th grade. Anyway, so we'll be done all the way by the end of January so that we can get our schedules ready for this year, starting February. We are behind schedule, but we are, even though we're behind where we would like to be, we are mountains ahead of where we've been in the past. Any questions on this before we move on to the next?
So does each counselor assign a certain number?
Yeah, based on the calendar. You can see the total number there. Spring is now on. on maternity leave, so I'm in the middle of still waiting to see what's going to
Is Catherine still taking students?
As you can see, she hasn't completed very many. She has 46 that she has determined that she would keep.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware she kept it.
Yeah. She hasn't done very many because she's been focusing on scheduling. I had asked all of the advisors to complete at least the 12th grade and 11th grade ones by now. And you can see the percentages of which have actually been completed. It'd be nice to have up to 10th grade done by now, but at least we're getting those that are in the college classes at the Salt Lake Community College and through Snow College. Those ones are kind of critical right now as it's time to sign up for classes. But the other ones should be done before, every single student should be met. That should have been met like before it's time to sign up for college classes for next school year. And then also as you look at this, if there's any other data or information you would like to see, again, the last three sections we have not updated yet. I started to do it, but it's, again, it's all a manual process. And so it takes a little bit of time. She got a report from Salt Lake Community College to show the number of students that are taking her normal classes. And I'm looking at a report that I found on her desk. It's not giving the information that she told me, so it's just based off what I understood of what she told me, that since Vanguard has started, we actually have a 300% increase in the number of students taking concurrent enrollment. And so we're doing quite well as far as the number of students. And then I think what she was saying is the number of students participating in concurrent enrollment compared to schools like Taylorsville High and East High School. We are one student above Taylorsville High and one student below East High. So even though we're a charter school, total number of students in concurrent enrollment classes. So you know, might look at it as thinking that maybe we're a little heavy on the admin side for our college career. However, we have our numbers just as high as these large colleges or large high schools. So anyway, kind of exciting.
Okay. We have several items to hold on today.
I forgot to print those again. Those policies were sent out. I don't know if Julie, is there anybody who needs them printed again or printed? I can pull those up.
And yeah, I think it'd be nice to
sorry.
Either print them or
saw that when I got here. And then
did we get the final versions in the email or have they been updated since then?
No, that's it. So what was in the email is the version. So the first thing listed is the approve the definition of at risk. So for the, what's it called? The abbreviation is EARS. It's enhancement for at-risk students. And there is a board, Utah State Board definition of what it means to be at risk. And it just focuses on being below proficiency on statewide tests. And so as I was calling to find out more, the grant has changed. In the past, there was only about maybe $30,000 or $40,000 available through the grant. This year, there's over $130,000. So that's a lot different. And I wanted to know what options do we have to be able to categorize in that grant. And so when I was talking to a person at the state office, and I've forgotten their name at the moment, but he was saying that he recommends that boards do adopt their own definition of at risk for failure, because it allows us to better identify any special needs at our school or anything like that, and allows us to broaden how we can direct that money and how it can impact students. And
with that, sorry, I'm also trying to print.
So the advantage to making this change in the definition is to give us more flexibility in how the funds are used.
Yes. And so I don't know if David wants to, I saw that you had yours. If you wouldn't mind reading the proposed, the board definition that's listed, and then the proposed definition, find my thing in print again.
Yeah, the state definition, at risk of academic failure as a K-12 public student. The A scores below proficient on board or LEA approved assessment. B meets LEA governing board's definition of at risk academic failure. And I made a note on my copy here, is that an and or an or? Do you have to be A and B, or one or the other? It's really a odd that you put and or in there in the statute.
And I may have omitted that. I think it is or. Because the second option is that it meets the governing board. So that would be, you guys have created the new definition. So it's either we meet this or we meet the board's approved definition. So I can pull that up.
Well, that was the statutory definition.
Yes, that was the statutory definition. I probably did leave off the word or. So it's they either A or B.
Which item is this on the agenda? Is that
it's number six.
Number six.
And I am printing those right now. Sir, I am printing them right now. Yes, thanks.
It was in the email, yeah.
Emailed it yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
It's the very last one.
All right, I've almost got it.
One yesterday.
Yeah. It's the middle.
It's the one page attachment.
There's just three attachments.
These policy. One you was looking at was that thing about these policy.
So what's the email from
Yeah, he was
actually on October 30th.
Is that from Stephanie?
Mm-hmm.
I think she likes me more than you. She might have
not seen it. Am I in that list?
Yeah. October 30th.
October 30th is when I got mine.
I sent it October 30th, and I believe I also sent it yesterday.
Yeah, I got it yesterday.
Oh, you were in the right email. Kim, there's the one you just opened up.
Yeah, that's what I had.
There's the at risk right there. What's the second one? I think it is.
Yeah,
that was the middle one from yesterday's.
So I have the student. I was looking right. At the one from a month ago.
Okay, sorry, I apologize. I walked in and then sat down and did not remember. Here is
she's got it for you.
A hard copy.
I know, we're old school.
Do you want to pass this down
to Scott? Fail.
All the class that's required.
Ask the same question.
So on the state definition, it does include after the letter A on letter A, it says scores below proficient on a board or local education agency LEA approved assessment, semicolon or. And then the B would be meets the LEA governing board's definition, approved definition.
What does LEA mean?
Local education agency usually refers to the district, and a charter school is its own district.
And then I copied David, so you get David's notes too, because mine just didn't want to open.
Well, you have to hold that.
I don't want to link the meeting.
they got okay.
Still item six.
Yes, is there any other items that we would want to consider adding to it, or do you feel like these three are enough? And what?
So how did we choose these additional criteria or these alternative criteria?
Primarily because of our school, the culture of our school itself. We have some real concerns about chronic absenteeism, and it is, according to their grades, it is definitely putting them at risk of academic failure from the absences. And then the credit recovery itself indicates that they have failed a course or more.
So would we only look at those that have failed a course, or are they considered at risk with the D's?
Well, it does say on number A or letter A, scores below proficient on board or LEA proved assessment and or is chronically absent, whether the absence was excused or not, or, and it probably should say and or on letter B as well.
And
just for statutory construction, you either want an or.
I think it would be or, just the way the state has it written, semicolon and then or.
And then put it before the last one, put it after B instead of after A.
So you would have A and it wouldn't have the or, and then B, and then you would have the semicolon or.
Correct.
And then needs credit recovery.
Does C covered by A?
No. The credit recovery is their class failing grade. The A is referring to the assessment,
like
their proficiency level on their assessments.
Okay.
And I think Joni brings up a good point, so perhaps the need for credit recovery should be amended to be
grades below
a C minus.
How many students would we have at risk under this definition?
Well, that MRP that Rebecca just sent over, that report she sent over, would tell me, but there are a significant number of D's and F's.
Just even the attendance alone.
Do you have a policy
supporting the state funding for students?
What it does is it allows us to use that funding to intervene on behalf of those kids.
So does it change the size of the funding?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, it just increases the flexibility of it.
So just F's, we currently have 269 F's.
269.
For all grade levels combined.
And that's this quarter.
Just this quarter?
Just
that's
quarter.
This quarter.
Wow. How many students does that represent?
It depends. You could have one kid with multiple
that's
F's.
Yeah.
And so that's
yeah, because 256 out of 400 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't represent students. It just represents failing grades. So.
And as you look at even the attendance, I think it must have been put in the teacher's checklist because I all of
it
a sudden
was.
Started getting a bunch of emails from teachers.
It was.
With attendance, and I'm like, oh.
And we're also getting some nice notes to reviewer on that so that we can better report or more efficiently report those absences so we don't have the same ones recurring every week that we're going to process.
I can tell you we also have 1,143 A's.
I think I agree with the comment on needs credit recovery. It should be a little more specific. My question on that would be, is there a policy somewhere else that defines when someone needs credit recovery? That we can refer back to a reference.
Any high school student who receives an F on a quarter grade.
Specifically refers to an F.
Yes.
So does this just give you the flexibility of assigning some of that funding towards credit recovery?
some of both. Right now, the way, because our greatest expense outside of the building is our salary, that would allow me to do it for like our attendance and our credit recovery monitor. The people that are doing those, I'm able to write their salary into the grant and know that it's supported by our vision of that. Because if we're going to have that be a focus, and we want that to, anyway, that's currently how I've written the grant, so that it would be able to cover the salary of the people who are doing those tasks.
Is this definition contingent in the grant? I mean,
so this definition that is whatever you guys want to have it. I just had to propose something for you guys to review that types them into what we were working on for the grant. And so we either have to choose that we are going to operate under the state board definition, or we have a Vanguard specific definition that says this is what it means to be a student at risk of academic failure at Vanguard.
Then it needs to match that.
I like these three. I guess my question is: is there any others that we might add to it? I think these three are definitely all at risk.
But what about the question of whether or not it should be credit recovery or C minus, D plus, D should be raised to include more?
The thing I would say is I think credit recovery might be sufficient for this particular definition, and the reason I would say that is because if we're looking for flexibility in attaching funding to anything, if a student has a C minus or a D or whatever else, yeah, we certainly want to try to keep them from falling through the cracks. But when we assign personnel or resources, it usually is when they have failed and we've got to provide that recovery.
And I wonder too, is, you know, right now we say, oh, you have all these absences, you have all these Fs, let's provide support. But I wonder if they're considered at risk at the D level. They're at risk of being at risk.
And like I said, I think it's a valid comment. I think we could do whatever makes sense.
Put the funds in there to address it before it gets extreme.
And one of the things with the, and we can write it however, but when we've met with teachers in the past, the attendance is one of those factors that usually have a student being in those categories. And so if they're not there, they're not getting the content. So it's very often.
This doesn't actually address anybody with just poor grades, perhaps. Only on proficient board LEA assessments. Mm-hmm. So this, do you want to include anything for just poor grades?
What if you say may need credit recovery? I mean, obviously, see my
list. At risk of.
Yeah.
at risk
of credit.
Including grades of below a C minus.
Would that be too general?
Is it if they just receive one grade below that threshold, or is it?
Right, and I would almost say that it would need to be in a core course, a state required course, because that's where credit recovery comes in. We don't necessarily graduation
requirements. Not core necessarily, but a graduation requirement.
Because if it's not a required graduation credit, we don't necessarily require the recovery.
Because if they fail language arts 9, for example, they will not take language arts 9 again unless they sign up for credit recovery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so one F could put them at risk of not
or they sign up for grade replacement, which the state allows to happen now.
But we still charge.
But it still is, yes, it still is. Well, we don't charge for that. They just become another student in that class.
So we change C then to needs credit recovery or receive a D in a core course. Is that what we're saying? Should we say C minus or lower?
It's a grade lower than a C minus, so less than 70%.
Or we want to make the threshold.
That's easy if you say it's less than 70% in a core. Course.
In a graduation.
You don't have to say
A, C, minus,
D.
What goes on the transcript, though? Do you get a percentage?
We get a grade.
Okay, so then you have to go by grade.
Less than a C minus, or a D plus or lower.
See, a D plus or lower.
D plus or lower on a
graduation requirement.
In a course
required for graduation.
In a core course required for graduation? Or
even just a course.
Not necessarily a core, but just a course required for graduation.
Or should the wording be words and the word defined as less than?
So I have it written here, needs credit recovery or received a D plus or lower in a course required for graduation.
Identify somebody at risk before they
have recovery. I just think we need a custom one for Vanguard that's different than the same.
So if they have a D, technically they've received the credit, but if they're getting a D, then they're at risk if it's not quite complete. I don't know if that makes sense.
It kind of like Kim's wording, receive less than a C minus in a course required for graduation. To replace a D plus or lower.
Yeah, less than. It's the same.
Okay. Should we do a motion? So that right now C says needs credit recovery or received less than a C minus.
How about a grade?
Received a grade.
One or more grades.
Grade less than a C minus.
Lower.
Yeah, course required for graduation.
One or more grades lower than a C minus. Sorry.
That's good.
So, okay, that now it says needs credit recovery or received one or more grades. Less than a C minus in a course required for graduation.
Yeah.
Sound good? Somebody want to do a motion? Put a vote on?
You should.
I'd make a motion that we adopt the custom definition of at-risk academic failure for Vanguard with the proposed here tonight with the additions and changes, including the word or after subpart E, and then we'll change subpart C to read needs credit recovery or received one or more grades less than a C minus in a course required for graduation.
Okay, so all in favor of approving the new definition of at risk? Based on the definition that David just read to us, say yes.
Yes.
All opposed, say no. Okay, that's been approved. That will be the new definition of at risk.
I'll make those updates and send that to the state.
Did you write it down
over
there?
Suzanne did.
Okay.
Okay. And.
Okay, the next.
So the next item, approved student rights and responsibilities policy.
Okay, I did create, I was hoping, anyway, when we send this out through an email, I did create a cover sheet to kind of go with it to give a little bit of information that I hope, if you want to get feedback on the cover sheet, that'd be lovely. Right now, we have a current policy that's 10.3, student rights and responsibilities. The highlighted section is addressing students in foster care, and that section has been added to the policy and was taken from some requirements to meet a Title I piece that addresses students in foster care. If ever the event that we had a student in foster care and they were transferred from one foster parent to another, and the student wanted to stay at our school, then we would have some responsibility to help that student be able to stay at the school. And it would be between our school and the school that they move to, like the district that they move into, to work out a way for that student to stay in their current school to create that stability for them. And so the Title I compliance and assurances listed some of that. And so we did not currently have a policy that specifically addressed students in foster care. So I took the information from other school policies and added it to our existing policy. So.
So in the text here, the school of origin means the school that they would be at
their original school. So
before they're moved.
Yeah, so before their foster parents. So that was just the wording that was already there. I didn't. But that is what that means, is whatever the school is. So for us, it would be for Vanguard. If they originally start in Vanguard, we would try to keep them there.
If foster placement changed, then we would be the school of origin.
So we would be responsible for the trust place.
We would, we'd work with the receiving school.
But where do those funds come from?
So, it just says
Title I.
We would probably use Title I. There is a set aside for homeless or for students migratory, so different things. So there is an amount that you do set aside to cover some of these things. But if it were to exceed it or whatever, the goal is to keep this student stable and to try to work out the most economical way to do that, and to look at transportation that's already going there. Is there a free system? Is there something? So they do recommend those types of processes. But
did we adopt this language from another school's policy?
Yeah, I just looked to see what was this kind of the standard statements in other policies.
Are we going to treat each one of these separately or as a group?
If there's no modifications, then we could do them all together. I didn't know if they do need to be approved for each of the different purposes. So that one did come through the work towards Title I, and the next one with the parent and family agenda item number 8, the parent and family engagement policy is also Title I. Also focuses on trying to have parents be involved, and they specifically require a parent and family engagement policy. And so this entire policy was drafted from scratch using the checklist that they provided and some guidelines. It did go through the School Improvement Trust Land Committee did review it at that level, so we did get some input that way. It's comprised of parents, and Eric Freeman is the chair of that committee, so he has seen it. I did send it out to RBLT last year. It's been a little while since they've seen it. And then the copy you have has David's notes. I couldn't get mine to load so I could print, so you have the benefit of seeing David's review. And so this entire policy is just the things that Vanguard is already doing that provides parent engagement, and then we just followed the checklist to make sure, they said, to make sure that it's how it will be updated or who will be involved, and so some of those things have been listed in it.
Okay.
Do we want to address the questions on here? Or do we feel comfortable as is?
They're minor, getting all of my comments. I think it was minor touch-ups. I didn't know what LEA was, and so if it's not defined anywhere else, then I don't think we got to define it anywhere else.
Also include their apologizing for coming in. It's really good to do it.
And a bullet point. Is there a deadline when we were looking to approve this, these policies?
I did already submit the grant information, so it can go longer if it needs to. I just, when I go through the grant requirements and the assurances, I review our policies to see. Sometimes there's updates to it, to what the requirement needs to be. So I just try to make sure that we are maintaining compliance in whatever area comes up. So if it does need to be carried over, we can do that. I just try to tie it to the same time frame when I'm working on this.
Are all three of these tied to that grant?
No, the last one is tied to the lunch program. So those two are, so the first one was the definition that's tied to the EARS grant. This item 7 and 8 are tied to Title 1, and item 9 is tied to the lunch program.
Are any of them more important to go through today, the letters, or should we?
They just all.
Yeah,
I guess the lunch one, we are in the process of our administrative review. It'd be nice to have that finalized because we have not. They will be on site at the beginning of January.
So given the review points that we have on here, which ones do we feel comfortable with pushing?
We could actually student rights and responsibility and specifying how it is. Right, agenda number 7.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the number 8 through one more review just to clean up some of the grammar.
Is anyone else saying about number 7? If you feel comfortable with number 7, you should go ahead and pass that.
I agree we should do number 7. The motion.
So there's a motion to do number 7. Do you have a second? Okay, all in favor of approving the students' rights and responsibility policy as written, say yes.
Yes.
All opposed, say no. So the student rights and responsibilities policy has been approved. We have two left. Number 8, we probably need to move that, give one more level of revision on that.
Okay.
So number 9, do we want to, how do we feel about the lunch and meal policy? Is that, it looked like we might be able to make a few simple changes and pass it, or what do you?
I think items do we want? Was this just drafted from scratch too?
It was taken from other schools that.
Okay.
So there were small modifications to fit it to specifically to Vanguard, but mostly it was taken from other schools' policies on how they address meal charge, because they have to have something that's stated on how they will process and handle when a student comes, because you're not supposed to. Make a scene, or anyway, when the student comes, if they're out of funds or whatever, how should that happen, and what's going to be done for balances that are not collected?
So I don't know. For me, when I was reading through the highlighted section, I had a question in my mind: when is it okay, when is it not okay for the student to charge a lunch when they have a past due debt?
And that's kind of the thing is, mostly with the lunch program, they kind of basically say you can't turn a student away. But we should have other things in place that we're trying to do to not get to that point, and what should the policy be. But a meal worker is technically, I think they're supposed, if a kid comes through the line, they're supposed to give them a lunch.
So it's unwritten here, but if they want to charge a lunch, no matter what the balance is, they can do it. Is that the policy?
I actually, in other schools where I've been, then if they have an unpaid balance, or anyway, if they don't have any funding in their account, then the food service was required to give them the sides, not the main. And it wasn't charged.
So,
Yeah, this, when I read it, I got the idea that it says if somebody wants to eat lunch and they get behind, then, well, you still got to give it to them. I mean, if they get this behind, then they still got to give it to them. And then if they don't pay it, then you don't charge them.
That's
so,
kind of how it, and part of it is a lot of schools have a la carte items, and so they will give, they will only give something like Suzanne said, just the meal,
they could go get
three meal components, but they can't get a la carte. So,
but if you do that, are you not discriminating? Because you're making them in public look like there's something wrong with them.
Mm-hmm. At one point, one of my schools had different colored trays for those who, and that had to be put to a stop because you have to not.
So it sounds like you discriminate. I mean, if somebody says, "Oh, how come you didn't get those?" Well, I can't.
Yeah.
Yep. And so. Anyway, so if it needs to be different, we did, Dawn Hayden pulled it, she's our lunch manager, and just pulled it from other policies to try to cover all of the requirements and how it would be addressed.
It seems like that if there was somebody who wasn't paying, then there should be, it should go up a notch to who finds out why they're not paying. And then, and the end result is the same, except there's a procedure for when somebody's not paying, then somebody tries to find out why.
And I think that's what it says. Yeah, families are encouraged to apply for the free relent, you know, so that's when you do. If you see there's a problem, then you contact the family and say, hey, do you want to apply for the free lunch, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because for some reason,
which we don't
have
the second
money
point
to pay
says
for
that
it.
They're encouraged to prepay so that they have a balance and they don't have to be in that situation. And
does it feel like that this is better than not having a policy?
I think it's better than not having a policy for sure.
This is better.
No question about it.
And possibly if we pass it, then we could monitor and see if there's an issue.
We could revisit it.
And then we could revisit it, because maybe it doesn't isn't an issue.
Yeah.
Possibly. And so I, for that reason, I'd rather have a policy. It's better than no policy. That will give us a chance to review if there's an issue. Or does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree with that. So. And I think my comment on there is I'm satisfied with the answer I received tonight as far as specifically on it. It's being addressed. My other comment on here, I just didn't know what it meant by positive situations. It was vague, so what does that mean? Mm-hmm. I thought.
I would say that it would be positive interactions. Isn't that what you just said, Kim? I think the word interactions to replace situations would probably be appropriate.
Interactions is more appropriate, I think. Makes mm-hmm. more sense to me.
Yeah. That gives a better idea, I think.
That's the
point. So we'll change the wording from positive situations to positive interactions?
Yeah. That sounds good.
I think if you feel comfortable, go ahead and vote on that. So I have to make a motion.
My motion to approve all the modifications suggested.
I second it.
So all in favor of approving the lunch and meal charge policy, say yes?
Yes.
With the addition of the change from positive situations to positive interactions. All opposed say no. Okay, the policy has been approved. That's the last item on our agenda. We'll push item 8 to a later meeting with after further review. And that's the end of the meeting. Motion to close.
Motion to close.
Second.
All in favor of closing the meeting say yes.
Yes.
All opposed say no. The meeting is closed.